Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are talking, I suppose we're talking the budget, but let's be a bit broader than that. Speaking of a budget, Martin, how are we fixed?
Stick your hand in your pocket. That's how we're fixed. We just need more money to get more of these out. And we have excellent guests. Like, our guest today is so top notch. So, you know, stick your hands in your pockets. Patreon.com/DoorToShack.
Just on housekeeping, lads, great feedback to the police podcast series. And the COVID care series is launching. It's probably going to be out by the time you hear this podcast, unless you're a patron, because you'll get this first. But anyway, enough of that. We are delighted to be rejoined by former head of the Fiscal Advisory Council and lecturer in UCC economics, and a good skin, I'd say. Seamus Coffey. Seamus, thank you for coming back on the podcast.
No problem, Tony. Thanks for having me back.
Now, listen, we have to go straight to the what we're looking at now is a budget that's going to be pulled in the midst of a pandemic. Just if you could give me a couple of broad statements, where do you think this is going to go in terms of the budget and the options that are open to our government currently?
I suppose one thing to consider when starting about the budget in a week's time is just to consider what's already happened this year. Like most years, there's a lot of interest in what happens on budget day. And you're typically looking maybe at the government having about 3 to 4 billion euro of additional resources, like a pretty substantial sum. Now, some of that goes on stuff that they're doing anyway. Like if the number of pensioners is increasing, there'll be more spending there. If they've public sector pay agreements in place, some of the resources will go there. So all told, you're looking at maybe somewhere around 1 or 2 billion each year. A lot of attention gets drawn on. The government spends about 85 or 90 billion in a normal year. But we do tend to get an awful lot of attention on what happens to that 1 or 2 billion. Does it go on tax cuts? Does it go on spending increases? But if you just take what's happened this year, already this year, we've probably had budgetary announcements where around 10 billion has been spent. We've had 3 budget days already in 2020 before we have the formal budget day in next Tuesday itself. So the public finances are in a very different position to where they were 12 months ago. But it is the nature of where we are. And a lot of it is temporary, we hope, because of the ongoing crisis. I do think there probably will be a 3 or 4 billion increase in normal government spending again this year. I don't see much reason to change that, even with the ongoing uncertainty. But the big changes have been in the temporary things that have happened over the past while.
Just, okay, so we've seen that when you were in the Fiscal Advisory Council, we operated through uncertain rules. We are, you know, debt to service, GDP ratio, the fiscal compact, and what we were trying to balance the books. We were coming out of, you know, a severe economic downturn. We were coming out through the global financial crisis. Those rules, I put it to you, don't apply anymore. Not this year. This year, even the EU and the IMF are saying, well, you know, we should be limiting the impact of this global pandemic on our society and then trying to protect the vulnerable. So do you think we'll see just those, will we see any sort of fiscal, I'm trying to think of the word. I don't want to talk about the fiscal space, but will we see any caution, or will we see just spend it as we need it?
I think there'll be two different elements to it. There'll be the amount that's devoted to kind of dealing with the pandemic, that what we consider the temporary measures, that the wage subsidy schemes, the unemployment payments, the additional resources required by the HSE. I don't think there'll be any issue there, that whatever monies are required will be made available on the basis that these are temporary things. And then, like, while the fiscal rules have been sort of temporary set aside, the idea of having 3 or 4 billion of additional spending for next year doesn't, in a sense, come from the fiscal rules. It's what's typically happened over the last number of years, and that would be on top of the emergency measures we'll see. So you see the government went through with their public sector pay agreement, the increase from the start of this month. They're likely to look at other areas where there'll be increases maybe on capital spending. So while the framework, the fiscal rules have been temporarily suspended because of the huge nature of the one-off shocks. You don't want to be assessing the rules and there's massive one-off spending. Let that work through the system. That should be done. And then maybe in two or so years' time, if you look back and see where the public finances are. But I don't see any big issues this year. I think the money that's needed for the temporary elements will be available. And then it'll be hard to identify the scale of what's going on. But I do think you will see that 3 or 4 billion increase that we've seen for most recent years. And in the last couple of years, the government has tended to devote that to spending. We haven't seen tax cuts in recent budgets. We've had the reintroduction of VAT, changes in stamp duty, changes in corporations that have brought in additional revenue. So actually, in gross terms, the amount of additional spending has been a bit higher than that $3 or $4 billion because of some tax increases. I don't know what they'll do on tax this year. We've already been told there'll be no tax cuts, but interesting to see whether there'll be any tax increases.
There's a lot of feeling throughout Europe. Everybody's trying to do their best. Is Ireland's attitude, this green jersey attitude, is that doing us any harm?
Well, from a fiscal perspective, I'm not quite sure what you mean by the green jersey attitude. Like, I think we're all dealing with uncertainty. In the last 24 or 48 hours, everyone talking about levels and advice from one level and decisions of another. I think it leaves us all pretty much in the dark. Like, I'm not a public health expert. We have to go with whatever those in charge feel is best, given the advice that's provided to them and the information they have. But I mean, doesn't appear to be anyone doing any way better than us. I think from a fiscal perspective, we seem to be doing all right. We had pretty quickly and rapid response back in March. Like, the pandemic unemployment payment was deliberately crude. It was set at €350 a week to get as money out to as many people as possible in as short a time as possible. I think hundreds of thousands of applications were processed in a matter of days. So that was incredible speed because of the way it was designed. And you could look and see it could have been more nuanced, but it actually did what it was supposed to do. And it got money out there pretty quickly. Whereas in other countries, it actually took weeks, in some cases months, for those type of payments to be processed. So I think our fiscal approach has been generally okay. Like, the CSO put up remarkable figures during the week on household income, and looking at the impact of the pandemic on household income, actually you can't see it at all. If you look at the headline figures, Irish household income was up 5% in the second quarter of this year compared to last year. And of course, the second quarter of this year was the height of the lockdown, the height of the pandemic, yet aggregate household disposable income was 5% higher. Now, once you go below that, there was carnage going on. Wages fell off a cliff. Without the wage subsidy scheme, they'd have been down 20%, a drop far greater than what we'd have seen back in 2008, 2009. Government transfer payments soared, up 40%, the pandemic unemployment payment. But the overall net effect is that, in aggregate terms at least, Irish household income held up pretty well. It actually looks like being the best performer in Europe. Not quite sure whether that's pulling on the green jersey, but that's what the figures are showing.
That is actually really fascinating, because our economy has held up very robustly, considering where everything else has gone off a cliff. We've seen pharma booming. We've seen, you know, our multinational, and I'd call some of our services industry, and in that you have to take into account our taxation policies and how that operates. All of that has held up remarkably well. But what we've also seen then is, in the real economy, is we've seen, you know, the CSO released another report that showed the standards of living, that we've seen some the key indicators of deprivation have gotten worse. So have we got two economies? Have we got the real economy on the ground, and have we got the headline economy, that, you know, the numbers? And how?
I think there's no doubt there's different elements to the Irish economy, and you can look at different measures, and some of them are wholly inappropriate. If you look at the most commonly used indicator or metric for the performance of economies around the world, is GDP, gross domestic product. How much stuff are you making? Like, from an Irish perspective, that means very little. It looks like this year, Irish GDP could be largely unchanged. It might be close to flat. It may possibly even show a slight increase.
It's ahead of predictions.
Oh, yeah. And that's driven, as you say, by the multinational sector. Like, on occasion, we can talk about the FDI and the multinationals as being a risk and a potential source of uncertainty for the Irish economy. But actually, in the midst of this pandemic, the sectors that we have FDI from, the pharmaceutical sector, the ICT sector, have been, in a sense, largely insulated from the pandemic, and perhaps have seen increases in output because of it. So the GDP number is going up. But as you say, that doesn't really mean a whole lot on the ground. It's the employment we're interested in. And actually, at the height of the pandemic, employment in Ireland was down 25%. So you can say GDP is flat, but if 25% of people have lost their jobs, that is a pretty significant hit. Now, the government did step in and support incomes, but a 25% loss of employment is very different to flat GDP. So I think that employment figure is a better indication of what happened to the economy, rather than looking at GDP. And anything quoted in Irish terms in GDP should be, in a sense, discarded. There are better measures out there. When it comes to the experiences of people, the CSO put out a timely release on the deprivation figures for last year, for 2019, and showed an increase, surprising increase, because 2019 was a time when incomes were rising, earnings were rising, employment was rising, yet these measures of deprivation actually went up. More households said they were unable to afford what we would consider to be basics that all households should afford. They have a list of 11, and I think I think all 11 showed increase where people were unable to afford what we would consider basic necessities.
Well, would that not show where the income equality is? And I know we have our transfers do the heavy lifting, but the actual income inequality is very bad. And that's beginning to tell now, where you do have this twin track, where some households where they can work from home, where they're not in the services industry, are doing exceptionally well. As you said, they've more money in the bank. But the other end, the people who actually have to go out to work and are working in less well-paid jobs, they are being crucified.
I don't necessarily think that this income inequality relative to other high-income countries is bad or high in Ireland. I think we are pretty much mid-ranking for that. The CSO deprivation findings, we haven't got the income figures associated with those yet. It was a preliminary release on the questions about ability to afford basic necessities, and the CSO generally published everything together, both the income and the deprivation figures. But this year that they put out the deprivation figures early, I think Eurostat were looking for them, and we have that report. It'll be another few weeks before we get the income figures to see what's happening. So it'll be interesting to see. I think we all thought the Irish economy was performing well in 2019, and this came as a bit of a bolt from the blue. Now, the deprivation figures are still well down on where they were back in 2012, 2013, 2014. The general trend is down. There has been a bump up in 2019, but 2019 was still well below almost all recent years. But when it comes to 2020, we're still a bit in the dark as to what will happen. And I think one area where we're particularly in the dark, we do focus on employees and those who go out to work and those who lost their jobs as a result of the pandemic. But one area where we're very much in the dark is when it comes to the self-employed, the people who actually are running these businesses. They haven't even filed their 2019 tax returns yet, so we don't know how they did last year, no mind how they're doing this year. And if their businesses are closed, it's very hard to see how their incomes have held up in this crisis. But I do think in overall terms, I know aggregate is crude, but in overall terms, we haven't done too bad in terms of offsetting the negative impact. It has been a huge public health crisis. But I think this is maybe the first time since the 1970s that we've seen a counter-cyclical fiscal response to a negative shock in Ireland. The government has pumped money into the economy right at the time when people's incomes need it. And we have a very, very bad record when it comes to that in Ireland. And we had the 1980s. Where the public finance got out of whack, the economy went into recession, and the government whacked up taxes and cut spending, made things worse. And of course, we had the same 10 years ago. When the crash came in 2008, what happened then was the government increased taxes and cut spending, and of course, made the downturn worse. This is maybe the first instance, I'd say, in 50 years where a downturn has come and the government has done the right thing and pumped money into the economy.
This is, though, speaks to a broader change in global global ideas around what was happening politically and economically. So we've had a change in economic policy where people have said, actually, you know, part of our polarization on politics was caused by the years or the decade of austerity and how this thing was treated. And we've seen where that gets us. We've seen how it's created more gaps and more issues for people. It's created problems for the EU, and it's created problems where we've seen, we're going to say, use this word, and I don't like using it because it's lost all meaning, but the rise of populism and things like that. And we've seen then the EU then committing to doing what was necessary. And now we're seeing, but that all of that, and accepting that all of that is true, are we not putting ourselves in a position, and I ask you this, Seamus, is when we have this money, should we not be taking it and actually spending it to change our economy as we emerge from this, what is a recession in effect?
We are spending lots of money. And I do think you are right, things have changed. And I think maybe one thing that needs to be recognised as change is monetary policy. If for some reason the pandemic was solely an Irish issue, if we were going through this on our own, the shutdown our economy on our own, I don't think we could have done the fiscal response. I'd be surprised if we were able to borrow the huge sums we're borrowing on an individual or isolated basis. But because this pandemic is global and all countries are going through very similar things, monetary policy by central banks, including our own European Central Bank, has been loosened. Interest rates have been pushed downwards. And central banks are pumping money into financial markets. Those markets we want to borrow from are awash with cash from central banks. So we're borrowing at close to zero interest rates. But I think one factor in that is that it's a global issue. I think if you go back to 2008, 2009, yes, there was downturns in most countries, but we were, in a sense, out on our own in the scale of the downturn and the scale of the banking crisis we had, and we couldn't find anybody to lend to us. We have no issues like that now. So I do think we are doing the borrowing. You could argue the money could be used differently, but we'll see when the budget comes. But I think we're probably going to see spending this year being 16 or 20 billion higher than it was last year.
You're a numbers guy. You are a numbers guy, and you're great at getting down into the weeds. And I really appreciate whenever, you know, we have engaged, you're always really good at the factual stuff. But in terms of the scale, like, does it, like, we spoke to Eric Lonergan, who, you know, he wrote Angrynomics recently, and he's arguing for, listen, let's just take the money and create a sovereign wealth fund. Let's try something brave. Let's try something completely off the cuff. Are we stuck with a 1920s Department of Finance and a 2020 globe world that can actually is ready for change?
I don't know, whatever about borrowing money to support housing, money to invest in shares isn't what the government should be doing. Yes, interest rates are low, and yes, there's possible returns to be made there by buying shares in large companies.
Well, I think
that's a risky activity that governments shouldn't be doing through sovereign wealth funds.
Well, what Eric is talking about is actually I would object to, because he's talking about getting someone like Blackstone to manage a sovereign wealth fund and guarantee a return. And I'd be there going, well, actually, Blackstone are building built-to-rent units all over Ireland that are forcing up property prices. I'm asking you, like, is there... Have we got imagination to actually to do these things, or are we stuck in the same pattern where I'm hearing people say that we'll have to, the central bank said it, I think it was this morning, Gabriel McAuliffe said, we have to start planning for when the bill will come due.
Yeah, that's down the line. Like, I think in the middle of the crisis, and I think crisis management and crisis response should be the priority at the moment. But again, I think if we compare what happened to 10, 12 years ago, what's happening now, I think there should be a recognition just how different the response has been. Like, we had 30 billion of austerity after the crash of 2008. It looks like we're going to have 30 billion of additional spending after the economic shock that the COVID crisis brought about. So it's a world apart. So I think, but looking for imagination, like, just how different do we want things to be? We're pumping huge amounts of money into the economy, supporting household incomes, trying to keep businesses alive. Isn't this what we should be doing?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's what we should be doing. But then we hear during the week that we could end up getting bailed out by the IMF again. And that doesn't seem to wash with where we're at the present moment in time. I mean, if the IMF are going to have to come in and bail Ireland out, they're literally going to have to come in and bail the world out.
I think if we were to be somehow just profligate with money and throwing away money in foolish needs, maybe something like that could be a possibility. I don't see it as being a possibility. I think because this is a global issue and countries are responding in a reasonably similar fashion, that the prospects of that to me seem remote. Yes, there is going to be a huge increase in the debt, but at present, as long as the ECB keeps interest rates low, it's not going to be an issue at present. And hopefully when the bill does fall due and these debts have to be refinanced in 10, 15 years' time, we'll hopefully have a period of economic growth, period of recovery, and the cost won't be that low. Yeah, there will be a cost, but I don't think there's any doubt that we should be doing this.
Actually, the IMF themselves have said that we should be not afraid to build out, and that's, they're not talking about Ireland, they're talking about the wealthy nations, is how they put it. So I do think it was disingenuous of the Taoiseach last night to talk about that as if it was a looming threat when it's not anywhere near where we are. Where you said it, I would say we're not even halfway through this crisis. And you know, again, how long is a piece of string? Where are we going to cut our cloth? But I don't see that being an issue. But it does worry me when we keep hearing. Some of the same rhetoric that was used at the, you know, in 2011 more so. And I know we've seen that. And I just, the mindset has to change. Do you think, though, in this two-track economy that we have, and it's my phrase, that the opportunity there to, you know, set a new benchmark where that 350 was, it was a blunt instrument. But if it was literally, here's 350, we're going to go from there. You spoke about the need for nuance in that. living wage.
Well, I don't think we had time for nuance. I think the blunt approach was the right thing.
No. Absolutely. We're not disagreeing here. We're saying that here's a catch-all number. Let's go with it. But however, going forward, are we looking at a situation whereby we can have a bigger now coming in, if this is going to be level 3 to level 4, back to level 3, down to level 2, up to level 3, should we be looking at ways of actually managing this better and building it into our economy that creates a better social protection net?
Oh yeah, like I think if we're going to have a broader discussion of how Ireland's approach to social protection is, I think there should be near unanimous agreement that we have a very somewhat simplistic system. A lot of our payments are flat rated. We call our social protection system pay-related social insurance, but actually the only bit that's pay-related are the contributions. The benefits you get whether you lose your job or the benefits you get in retirement are flat rated. Unemployment benefit is the same for everybody. The contributory pension is the same for everybody. Whereas in other countries, they'd be more linked to the contributions you make. So if you're on a relatively high income in Ireland and you lose your job, the loss of income is quite severe. Whereas in other countries, that's kind of staggered. You might get 80 or 85% of your income for the first couple of weeks or months, then it would drop to 60, 50 over a longer period, and then maybe as you got back into employment, you'd come off that. Whereas in Ireland, you go on to a flat rate straight away, and it doesn't change. So for some people, the income loss can be quite severe. So I think there is maybe agreement out there that we should have a look at how our social protection system works because of the income losses that people can suffer, that the benefits aren't linked to the contributions. Now, in saying that, that sounds attractive, but that could actually increase in inequality. Martin mentioned the impact of our transfers on inequality in Ireland. One reason the transfers are so effective at reducing inequality is that they're all the same. Everybody gets the same. So when it comes to those aged over 65, if the pension is a flat-rated system, well, that's an equal system. Whether we call that equality fair because it's not linked to the contributions, that is a big debate. But it does contribute to the reducing inequality we see in Ireland once you take into account those transfers, the fact that everybody gets the same amount.
How long can we stick to the plan that's there in Europe at the moment with pending lockdowns across Europe? Does it come to the stage where they're going to have to rethink the plan if we hit lockdown before Christmas? And I don't mean just us, I mean around Europe. And then again, maybe in February next year, it's coming again. Is it then time to rewrite what the plan is for the present time and just put more and more money in?
I think at this stage, the budget constraint is relatively loose. I think the ECB have taken a stance that has assisted governments in spending this money across the Eurozone. Like Ireland, while not in the strongest position, definitely wasn't in the weakest position. We had our budget close to a balanced position. Tax revenues were growing reasonably robustly and strongly. Yes, the debt was high, but we definitely weren't the weakest. And I don't see any concerns really across the Euro area with any country, even Italy and Greece. Possibly not spending as much as Ireland, but I don't see concerns about their ability to raise funds on markets. So I think for it to get as far as Ireland or maybe to have a change in plan would first of all require the ECB to change. And I don't think they want to see a public health crisis become a sovereign debt crisis. We allowed a banking crisis in 2008 become a sovereign debt crisis. Surely we've learned a lesson and don't let a public health crisis become a sovereign debt crisis.
So here's, and again, should we be able to then say to people who are saying, look, we can't do this, we can't do that, when the simple fact is, now is the time to actually do it.
To do what?
To take on an actual state building public housing. Let's do it that way. Let's put it.
I think the broader point of capital spending is important. Mm. Again, going back to 2008, 2009, when you talk about austerity, the biggest area of austerity we had was in capital spending. It was slashed by 2/3. It was about 10 billion in 2008, and it was close to 3 billion just in 2011, 2012. The capital budget was eviscerated. And I think we're perhaps suffered some of the costs of that over the last 5-6 years where public capital programs were stalled and weren't maintained, and certain capabilities and, of course, resources weren't available. I think this time what we'll see is that the public capital budget will be maintained, possibly even increased. We could see announcements in next week's budget that certain projects are being brought forward, that the government wants to do them, maybe plan to do them in 2022 or 2023, and is now saying we're going to bring them forward. And I think that would be an appropriate thing to do, again, because the resources are there in the economy, both the financial resources, we can borrow the money to do it, and the labour resources are there. So I think that would be the appropriate thing. Now, what that money is spent on is, of course, a political choice. Does it go on houses? Does it go on roads? Does it go on hospitals? Well, they're all choices that are there.
Let's accelerate Sláinte Care. Let's accelerate Sláinte Care and let's do a public public and social, mixed, affordable, cost rental, or whatever you're having yourself, you want to put on it, let's do that. Because as you said, we can borrow very cheaply and we're not under the constraints that we can do it. And nothing actually helps your pension down the road, then good housing, adequate supply, you know, all of these secure housing things, they actually have huge positive net impacts for us economically down the road. I just think there's an opportunity there. The last thing for me now, and I mean this is so. Do you think that we've seen a change now in political economic ideology? How are we now looking into a process whereby we have now we've seen even parties who I would have deemed on the centre right now are looking and saying, well, many of the ideas now are bigger state, more state, and more and a better and more state intervention.
It's hard to know. Like, I think the response to this crisis, if the government of 2008-2009 could have done what's happening now, I think they'd have done it. I don't think they'd have gone out to increase taxes and cut spending the way they did if the opportunity to borrow money was there and people were willing to lend. The issue in 2008-2009 is that the crisis in Ireland was a structural change. Our economy was built on a foundation of credit, of construction, of conveyance of houses. And was that pulled away, nobody was willing to lend us money to fill the gap. But if the opportunity was there, I think the response would have been somewhat similar to where it is now. I think now the opportunity was there to support incomes and to support the economy. And I don't know who would have turned it down. It's good that we haven't, that we have pumped tens of billions into the economy. Whether that's a change in ideology or a change in the opportunity set faced by politicians, I don't know. But I think the debate should recognise just how different the response this time has been to what's happened in Ireland in the past.
I just have one last question for you, and it's one that we talked about before we came on air. Working from home, is that going to fundamentally change thoughts on economics?
It's definitely changing how economics is taught, anyway, can I tell you that? I'm used to standing in front of rooms of students and engaging with them and interacting with them, but those opportunities are completely denied to us. Is it going to change economics? Maybe when it comes to how resources are used, like what are city centre buildings for? Are they for offices or are they for other purposes? We'll see how this plays out over the next while. Maybe some businesses will find that working from home is a benefit. Though I think there's benefits in bringing people together and the social interaction, which is something I certainly miss.
But is it worth like a 2 million HQ to do it? That's the question.
Yes, and I think that can be down to bean counters to work out whether that's what they should be doing. But I think when you bring, like, I think at the moment, because people were in existing jobs, in existing positions and knew who their colleagues were, maybe the cost certainly is there. But if you do this over the long term and you bring people into a business, into a education institute, and they don't know the other people they're working with, how do you do that if we're all working from home? So I think that there are some advantages from working from home, but I think over the long term, hopefully we will go back to our offices.
I just want, it's not a question so much as a comment, there's also creative and cultural capital. And I think some of that is lost in things like working from home, and the creative spark of people interacting together is lost as well. I do think there's much more space for that. I'd love to see if we could get if you can get me a metric for measuring that, Seamus, I'd be very happy, because I do feel that the creatives and the artists and all the rest of it, they're very much in the halfpenny place when it comes to how we serve them in the economy. But look, Seamus Coffey, thank you so much for your time. It's always good, guys. When you see me and Seamus interact on Twitter, by the way, we're not at each other's. We're not butting heads here. We're having a conversation. You don't need to reply with your one side or the other, please. We're on speaking terms, you know.
And he's also Seamus is also one of the best people in the world to drag figures out of. 100% one of the best people in the world to drag figures out of.
figures out of.
Thanks for listening, folks. We really appreciate it. Patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Please help us keep this going. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin.